You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
All right. District Court's again in session.
Thank you. Please be seated.
All right, let's have the jurors brought in, please.
All right, please.
Thank you. Please be seated.
All right. We just completed the mid-morning recess. We're still on the record. KCR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell, continuing with direct examination of Agent Balance. Mr. Wood, if you'd like to continue on direct, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may I continue to publish?
You may.
Agent, before the break, we had just left this slide. So just for purposes of continuity, if you just very briefly re-summarize this slide so we can move to the next.
Sure. This was looking at Google location history associated with a device for Alex Cox and locations in and around the Chad Daybell property between 9:21 and 10:57 in the morning.
What do we see on slide 28?
So this is looking at a tower and sector that provides coverage to the Chad Daybell property. And the Chad Daybell 0143 phone and its use between 10:35 in the morning and 12:20 that afternoon. And in the box, you can see there's multiple text messages and one call, again, beginning at 10:35 and going through 12:20.
And in the legend, it just has the number for Chad Daybell. Are you familiar with the numbers that he is communicating with?
I am. So the number ending 4652 would be associated with Lori Vallo.
Is it fair to say that much of these communications on this slide are taking place during the same time frame as this slide?
It goes a little bit beyond that, but okay. Yes.
And what do we see on slide 29?
So that's looking at the dominant and coverage area of the tower that was used from the previous slide, indicating that that tower does provide coverage to the Chad Daybell property.
And slide 30?
And this is just a zoomed in view of the previous slide, again, indicating that that tower provides coverage to the Daybell property.
And what do we see in slide 31?
So this is Google location history, again, associated with the account for Alex Cox's device. Starting at 11:42 in the morning, there are two locations reported to Google up here. One is at 11:45, 28 meter margin of error, and then one just preceded that at 11:42 with a 4 meter margin of error just north of Chad Daybell's property. And then at 11:46 and 11:47, there's two additional Google locations reported consistent with southbound travel away from Chad Daybell's property.
And again, that's September 9th?
Correct.
And what do we see on slide 32?
So this is looking at calls that were made. I'll start at the top. From the Chad Daybell 0143 phone, an outbound call of 183 seconds made to the Lori Vallo 4652 phone. And again, that was at 11:45 in the morning, utilizing a tower that provides coverage to the Chad Daybell residence. And then also the number ending 9120 associated with Alex Cox making an outbound call to the 4652 Lori Vallo phone, utilizing a Verizon tower that also provides coverage to the area around the Daybell property. And then the location of the Lori Vallo 4652 phone whenever it received those calls consistent with being down in the area of Rexburg.
All right. So just to be clear, that top box in blue, that's a phone call from a phone associated with the Chad Daybell to Lori Vallo.
That's correct.
And that middle box, the first red one, that's an outgoing call from a phone associated with Alex Cox to a phone associated with Lori Vallo.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And again, just for clarity, these symbols here, if you can just remind the jury, just since we came in off that break, what those describe?
For sure. Those represent the specific sectors on that tower that were used. So you can see those shapes or wedges. They represent approximately 120 degrees of that piece of pie that I mentioned earlier from the circle.
And what do we see on slide 33?
So that's specific to the Verizon tower that was utilized by the 9120 phone associated with Alex Cox and what that coverage area looks like. That does include Chad Daybell's property in the area to the south.
And that's related to the phone call he made on the previous slide?
Correct. That's the tower that was used to make the phone call from the previous slide.
And slide 34.
And again, this is just a zoomed in view of that coverage map.
What do we see on slide 35?
These are two interactions with the network, both of them text messages. At 12:32 and 37 seconds, the 0143 phone associated with Chad Daybell receives a text message from the 4652 phone associated with Lori Vallow, and it utilizes a tower that does provide coverage to the Daybell residents. And then approximately 1 minute later, there's an outbound text from the 0143 phone associated with Chad Daybell to the 4652 phone associated with Lori Vallow. That tower, which we'll see in following slides, does also provide coverage to the Daybell residents. I would speak more to that on one of the following slides. And that's where you can see the coverage map associated with that tower down in Rexburg, which does provide coverage to the north-south road that goes up towards Chad Daybell's property, but it does include the Chad Daybell property.
And what is significant on slide 37?
So this is a call a few minutes later, or an inbound text message a few minutes later received by the 0143 Daybell phone from the 4652 Lori Vallow phone. This tower does not provide coverage to the Daybell residents and would be consistent with that 0143 phone traveling away from the residents.
And is that moving in a southern direction from the home?
Yes, sir. South towards Rexburg.
And what do we see on slide 38?
This is showing the coverage of that tower from the previous slide and showing basically that it provides coverage to a little ways north of Rexburg. But it is zoomed to the viewpoint that shows the coverage, which does not include Chad Daybell's residence.
And so just to clarify, this is related to the last two slides then?
No, that is a separate tower. So okay. If you go back one more and one more. Sorry, keep going. So that tower that you see to the south, the coverage map for that is the one that does include coverage to Chad Daybell's property. The one at 12:39, I believe it was, that's a separate tower than the one depicted earlier. And that one does not include coverage to Chad Daybell's property.
What do we see on slide 39?
So this is looking at on September the 9th, between 12:43 and 12:49, tower usage by the 0143 phone associated with Chad Daybell, the 9120 phone associated with Alec. Yes, ma'am. Associated with the 0143 phone. Tower usage associated with the 9120 phone, which is associated with Alex Cox, and then tower usage of the 4652 phone, which is associated with Lori Vallow.
And what do we see on slide 40?
So this is looking at the coverage maps of the different towers that were utilized in the previous slide.
And so is it fair to say that the phones we were looking at in the previous slide, the 9120, the 0143, are within the Rexburg area at that time?
Correct. You'll see from the drive test data that the Verizon tower that is utilized by the phones associated with Alex Cox and Lori Vallow actually do extend up pretty far north and could potentially include the Daybell property. But the tower use of the 0143 phone used by Chad Daybell is depicted in orange, which does not include a Chad Daybell residence and provides coverage to the Rexburg area.
Can you point that out to the jury, that area?
For sure. The area that I'm circling with the winner in orange.
What do we see on slide 41?
So this is zoomed in where it shows the coverage area of the Verizon tower utilized by phones associated with Alex Cox and Lori Vallow, as well as coverage in orange associated with the 0143 Chad Daybell phone. And the overlapping coverage area does include Alex Cox and Lori Vallow's residence. You also see Google location history at 12:43 and 1246, reporting from a device associated with Alex Cox's Google account, consistent with being at Alex Cox's residence.
That's still September 9th.
Correct.
Agent Balance, were you asked to look at cellular and Google data related to on or around September 23?
I was.
Of 2019.
I was, yes, sir.
And why was that?
In conversation with investigators, it was determined that the last photograph of JJ Vallow alive was on September the 22nd.
So what do we see on slide 43?
So here we're looking at September 23rd between 3:59 in the morning and 8:35 in the morning. Multiple outbound text messages and one inbound text message. And these exchanges are all between the 0143 phone associated with Chad Daybell and the 4652 phone associated with Lori Vallow. The tower and sector that was used by the 0143 phone provides coverage to the Chad Daybell residence.
And I think you said it, but what is the time of that first message?
That's at 3:59 in the morning, and that is an outbound from the 0143 phone associated with Chad Daybell to a phone associated with Lori Vallow.
And what do we see on slide 44?
That's Google location information associated with an account attributed to Alex Cox on September the 23rd, between 9:01 in the morning and 9:41, consistent with being at Alex Cox's apartment.
So during that approximately 40 minutes, is it fair to say that that device is relatively non-moving?
Correct. All of those are repeated locations with the same margin of error.
And what do we see on slide 45?
So this is mapping out a phone call that was made from the 9374 phone associated with Chad Daybell, utilizing a Verizon tower that provides coverage to the Chad Daybell residence. And the call is made to the phone number ending 9120 associated with Alex Cox.
What time is that phone call made?
That's at 9:25 in the morning.
How long are you able to tell from the cell data you received? The call data, how long that phone call was?
Yes. So you can see after the type, the 38, that represents a phone call of 38 seconds.
And this is September 23rd.
Yes, that's correct.
What do we see on slide 46?
That's just showing the tower and sector that was used in the previous slide, what the coverage looks like for that Verizon tower, and that it includes the Chad Daybell residence.
And 47?
It's just a zoomed in version of the previous slide, again, to show the coverage includes the Chad Daybell residence.
What do we see on slide 48?
So this is showing activity on the 0143 phone associated with Chad Daybell, as well as activity on the 4652 phone associated with Lori Vallow. Specific to the 0143 phone, there's three different towers that are utilized, all of which provide coverage to the Daybell residence. And then there is the tower that is utilized by the phone associated with Lori Vallow is utilizing a tower in Rexburg.
And all those communications take place between what time?
9:27 and 9:37 in the morning.
On September 23rd?
Yes, sir. Correct.
What do we see on slide 49?
So here we see starting at 9:45 and continuing through 9:49. Google location history associated with Alex Cox's Google account, showing the device that was reporting to that account consistent with movement away from his apartment north on Highway 20.
And is that traveling towards Chad Daybell's property? Are you aware?
It is.
What do we see on slide 50?
So this is showing Google location information associated with Alex Cox's account with Google, showing that his device was reporting in and around Chad Daybell's property between 9:55 in the morning and 10:12. And then specifically on the top right, there are two locations reported via GPS. One of them is at 9:56 with a 4-meter margin of error. The other one is at 10:02 with a 3-meter margin of error, which are close in proximity to where JJ's body was found.
What do we see on slide 51?
Those are the same two locations that I just spoke about on the previous slide. They just include the yellow margin of error to show the accuracy associated with those two locations.
What was significant on slide 52?
So this is looking at the usage of the 0143 phone associated with Chad Daybell. The two different towers that were utilized between 9:30 in the morning and 10:27 in the morning on September the 23rd. So you see on the right, there's multiple outbound calls and text messages, as well as one inbound text message. All of those are exchanged between that phone and the 4652 phone associated with Lori Vallow. And then you see the tower usage down here. Two of those, one an outbound call and then one an incoming SMS or text message, are associated with the 4652 phone attributed to Lori Vallow. So the significance that I talked about earlier, as far as looking at whenever two different towers are utilized, that that phone would need to either be, depending on the time, within the overlapping coverage area or in close proximity to that overlapping coverage area. And then this is just showing the overlapping coverage area in orange that includes Chad Daybell's residence.
What is slide 54?
And that's just a zoomed in version of the previous slide.
And what do we see on slide 55?
This is showing Google location information between on September the 23rd, between 10:12 in the morning and 10:20, consistent with a device associated with Alex Cox reporting Google location information showing at 10:12 in the morning, consistent with being nearby the Daybell property, and then at 10:20 being back down, consistent with being in Rexburg.
On September 23rd.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
And what do we see on slide 56?
So this is showing on September the 23rd between 10:13 and 10:17 in the morning, use of the 0143 phone associated with Chad Daybell, and three outbound text messages, all to the 4652 phone associated with Lori Vallow. Those are at 10:16, all at 10:16. And then an outbound call from the 9120 phone associated with Alex Cox at 10:13, calling the 4652 phone associated with Lori Vallow. And then at the bottom, the location of Lori Vallow's phone whenever it received that incoming call, because again, it's on Verizon, so the text messages don't record the tower and sector.
Agent, did you look at any other times where the Homer J. Maximus account showed up at or near Mr. Daybell's residence?
I did.
And did you have any parameters that you put on that search?
Yeah, so the same parameter that I mentioned earlier, where I was looking at any location that had a margin of error of 100 meters or less for the Google location history.
And did you include those at the end of this report?
I did.
Agent, is this in relation to what we were just talking about, other times when the Homer J. Maximus account or a device associated with it shows up at or near Chad Daybell's property, is this a summary of that?
It is. It just does not include the two dates that we just went over. It includes other dates in addition to those.
So what do we see on slide 105?
So this is Google location reporting associated with Alex Cox's Gmail account for a device reporting on August 7th between 109 and 120. The locations as indicated on the map, consistent with being at the Chad Daybell property.
And what do we see on slide 106?
The same reporting that I just mentioned associated with the same account, just on August 24th between 7:24 and 7:32 p.m.
And slide 107.
Location information associated with the same account that I just mentioned on September the 6th between 12:42 and 12:54 p.m.
And slide 108.
The same account associated with Alex Cox indicating a device reporting on September 25th between 10:05 in the morning and 10:23 in the morning, in the vicinity of Chad Daybell's residence.
Agent, we have gone over a lot of data in terms of cell coverage and GPS, Wi-Fi hits. I just want to go back over a few slides for purposes of establishing time.
Sure.
I'm going to start on slide 20. And so, like I said, we've already gone over this slide, but just for purposes of establishing the time, time frame-wise, what happened in this slide?
So a device associated with Alex Cox's Gmail account was reporting on September the 9th at 2:42 and 3:37 in the morning, consistent with being just west of Lori Vallow's apartment. And then at 4:30, from 4:37 to 4:41, it's reporting consistent with being at Alex Cox's residence.
All right. And on slide 22, in terms of the time frame of this call, what is the time?
So that call occurs at 8:11 in the morning from the 9374 phone associated with Chad Daybell to the 9120 phone associated with Alex Cox.
That's on September 9th again.
Correct.
Okay, I'm going to go to slide 26. What do we see in terms of time on this slide?
So there's two locations, one at 8:49 in the morning on September the 9th, one at 9:15 in the morning on September the 9th, from Alex Cox's Google account, which is consistent with travel between that time frame from Rexburg towards Chad Daybell's residence.
On September 9th.
Yes, sir. Correct.
And slide 27, in terms of the time frame.
So that's looking at between 9:21 in the morning and 10:57 in the morning on September the 9th. A device associated with Alex Cox's Google account reporting to be in and around Chad Daybell's property.
And slide 31.
Showing on September the 9th from 11:42 to 11:45, Google location information associated with Alex Cox, consistent with leaving the Daybell property going south. North initially, and then south.
And in terms of September 23rd, go to slide 45. What are we seeing in terms of time frame?
We're seeing on September the 23rd at 9:25 in the morning, the 9374 phone associated with Chad Daybell is calling the 9120 phone associated with Alex Cox.
And skipping to slide 49, in terms of time frame, what do we see?
Between 9:45 and 9:49, Google location history associated with Alex Cox, consistent with traveling north away from Alex Cox's residence, north on 20.
And slide 50 in terms of time frame.
Looking at September 23rd, between 9:55 and 10:12 in the morning, a device associated with Alex Cox's Google location is indicating being in the area of the Chad Daybell property and the backyard.
Then just one more. In terms of time frame, slide 55.
Showing Google location history associated with Alex Cox's account, indicating that the device is at 10:12 in the area of the Chad Daybell property. And then by 10:20 is down towards Rexburg, indicating or consistent with southbound travel away from the property.
Right. Your Honor, at this time, I have no further questions for this witness.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wood.
Judge, I'm going to need the exhibit to utilize the exhibit during my cross.
Okay. The one we were just publishing from 56.
Yes, Judge.
Okay. And fair enough, Mr. Wood. Mr. Wood, if we could just have the exhibit from the bailiff brought to Mr. Pryor, please.
It's here on the table.
Thank you. If you'd like, Mr. Pryor, you can go ahead and get your device set up and make sure the exhibit's functioning on your device as well before you step across.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Agent.
Good morning, sir.
Before we get into some of my preliminary questions, I actually just want to skirt ahead a little bit to and sort of go out of order. Are you okay with that?
Absolutely.
Okay. I noticed when I got your report, I reviewed your report. And what's the significance of October 9th? Do you recall?
Sure. So October 9th, I believe, was associated with a report from Tammy Daybell of potentially having someone attempt to assault her.
Right. That was whoever's interpretation of paintball gun potentially was involved, correct?
That's what the report indicated.
But there was an interaction with Tammy Daybell on that date, correct? That's what you recall?
Yes, there was a report indicating there was an action that took place on that
date. Now, I read your report, and do you recall the approximate time that the report stemmed from the 911 call on Tammy Daybell?
I don't.
Would it be possible that it was about 9:30 to 10 o'clock? Does that refresh your recollection?
I know it was in the evening hours, but specific time, I don't.
Now, based on your analysis about Alex Cox's phone, and I just want you to touch on the your evaluation of that October 9th time. Can you tell me what Alex Cox's phone and where it was binging on October 9th between approximately 5:30 and 10:30 at night?
Did you say binging?
Well, where it was locating, where it was showing location data.
I need to look at my report to
do you have a copy of my report?
Recollection. I don't.
Judge, could I publish this?
Not sure. Are we on the exhibit 156?
We're on exhibit 156, page 80.
Okay.
Are you able to see that, agent?
Yes, sir, I can.
Okay, so I'm looking at the Homer J. Maximus, and I'm looking at October 9th. Why don't you read that time for me?
Yeah, so this is October the 9th between 5:16 p.m. and 11:53 p.m., showing Google location history associated with Alex Cox's device.
Okay, and that's on October 9th, is that correct?
Yes, sir, it is.
And that was the date that allegedly there was some sort of an incident on Tammy Daybell's property and between 9:30 and 10 o'clock, is that correct?
My understanding was the evening hours, but okay. I think that would encompass it.
So according
to this... I need to have you talk into the microphone to keep our record for FTR.
I'm sorry, Judge. And according to your data, it appears that the phone associated with Alex Cox from the Homer J. Maximus account puts Alex Cox where between 5:16 p.m. and 11:53 p.m.?
So it puts the device at Alex Cox's residence.
Your Honor, may I ask for just a, and I apologize to interrupt, but may I ask for just a brief sidebar?
Yes. All right. You can continue with cross, Mr. Pryor.
So again, officer, and the display is not up anymore, I guess. We're looking at 5:16 p.m. to 11.
Let's get that up. Sorry to interrupt. Mr. Pryor, we'll make sure we got the... Okay.
So Alex Cox's phone, and tell me, what is the proper term? It's showing a location data on October 9th between 5:16 p.m. and 11:53 p.m. Is that what that reads?
Yes, correct.
And that's on October 9th, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, and we can take that down, Judge.
Thank you, Madam Clerk.
And Judge, one more time on page 104.
You want to publish that page?
Yes.
All right, Madam Clerk, we'll publish the exhibit again, please.
So other than the references to September 9th and September 23rd, correct? There were five other times that you put Alex Cox at or near the Chad Daybell property. Is that correct?
So there were five other occasions where a device associated with Alex Cox reported.
Alex Cox's device.
Correct.
And those would have been August 7th?
Correct.
And that was for about 11 minutes, right?
Yes, sir.
And then August 24th for 8 minutes.
Yes, sir.
September 6th, 3 days before the 9th, and he was there for about 10 minutes, right?
9 minutes, sir.
9 minutes, I'm sorry. My math is probably not as good as yours. September 25th, 2 days after the 23rd, he was there for 18 minutes, right?
Yeah, and I'll back up. Your math is actually better than mine because that would have been... 11 minutes.
They're both wrong.
Indeed.
And then October 15th. So now, when I read your report, your contact was limited to 100 meters. Is that correct?
Yeah, my analysis was based on margins of error that were less, 100 meters or less.
300 feet.
Approximately.
So that does not include... If Alex Cox drove by a number of times, right?
It could, because if that device was had that 100 meters or less and it went by on the street beside the residence, it would have been included in there.
Okay. And it, but if he was with it, with he was more than 100 meters away, it doesn't include these figures aren't included in that. Is that correct?
So if the device was more than 100 meters in error, then it wouldn't include it.
Right.
So as long as that 100 meters, that circle that I showed earlier with yellow, as long as it touched the Daybell property, that's when it was included.
Okay. And Judge, we can take this one down. Now, I want to go back to just to clarify a couple of things in terms of explanations. Go ahead. I'll wait for you.
Sure. You're good.
Oh, do you need some water?
You're good.
Okay. What's the difference between a tower and a cell site?
So if you get into the specifics, the cell site in the industry is more or less used for the tower and sector, whereas the tower would just include the tower itself.
Okay. So your presentation deals with tower coverage, is that correct?
Correct.
And the tower is basically where the antenna is on the top of whatever the structure is. Is that fair?
Correct.
Okay. A cell site is how they actually create the coverage. Is that fair?
So if you're looking at the cell site, the specific antenna that are on top of the tower and the direction that they face, that's usually termed to be the cell site of what it provides coverage for.
So we're not really talking about tower coverage. We're talking about cell site coverage, aren't we?
The tower coverage would include all the sectors, whereas a cell site would be specific to a sector.
Okay. Okay. And the importance of how an antenna is located plays into how these figures are calculated. Would that be fair?
Correct.
So for instance, if an antenna is a little pointed down or pointed up, that will manipulate and have an impact on what the readings that you're getting. Would you agree with that?
It would impact the coverage based on which direction antennas are facing.
And when we're talking about coverage, we're talking about with what you're talking about with coverage, we're talking about where an area of a cell phone company is providing service. Would that be fair?
Correct.
You never use these coverage towers to actually locate where a phone is. Isn't that true?
No, I definitely would use coverage maps to locate where a phone is and okay. have in the past.
So when did you do the drive test? On what day?
I believe it was June, the week of June 15th, and it was across multiple days of 2020.
Okay. So in 2019, particularly in September, that was a significant amount of time later, correct?
It's about 9 months after.
Right. And we have no assurance that the antennas or the coverage or the engineers made any adjustments or changes, do we?
We do. So I looked at the tower lists that were provided from AT&T and Verizon for okay. September of 2019. And then I compared those with the tower lists from June of 2020. And I didn't see anything in any of the towers used in this report that would significantly impact what the coverage would have been or changed.
Significantly impact?
Correct.
So there were changes?
There were no changes in direction of which way sectors were pointed. There was changes in what's called the beam width. And they were off by 5 degrees, I think.
Okay. All right. Thank you. With drive testing, you still can't provide an exact location of where a device is, can you?
Correct. Drive testing is basically going to show you a coverage area of where a phone could be.
Where a phone could be, right?
Correct.
It doesn't show where the phone is, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, you mentioned this a couple of times with the prosecuting attorney. You mentioned the term gladiator forensics.
Yes, sir.
Now, the way I understand gladiator forensics is that's a tool used by the FBI.
They're a company, and they provide a tool that's used by the FBI.
But that company will not provide their tools to anybody but the FBI. Is that fair?
No, my understanding is they will only provide or sell their equipment to law enforcement. I don't think it's specific to the FBI.
To the government.
Correct.
So an independent person can't get a hold of this information from Gladiator Forensics and do their own analysis of what your data is showing. Is that right?
No, the information, most definitely. That's whenever it records the information as a part of the drive test, we have a raw data file that shows all of the different measurements and the latitude, longitude of the location of where the device was when it took those measurements.
Well, you're providing the data. But the actual tool and the program itself is not available to anybody unless you're within the government. Isn't that true?
I believe their specific company only sells to law enforcement.
So you folks have the program. You folks have the way to input the data into your program that's only the government has access to. Is that right?
So we have a tool that allows access to it, but Gladiator doesn't make the only tool that would provide that same information.
Okay. But the tool that the FBI is using is not available to the public at large. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. To your knowledge, has anybody ever done any independent testing outside government to prove that this tool that you're using is working properly?
Yeah, so we actually send that device off to the company that manufactures the sensors, Rogen Swartz, and they calibrate that system.
But then again, that's not available to the average citizen out there, correct?
It is. The sensors by Rogen Swartz are sold to the general public.
But the tools by Gladiator Forensics are not.
So when you say tools, basically like the components of the device, yes, they are. But as packaged by Gladiator, that is not available to the public.
Okay. So once again, if someone wants to verify that the tools that you folks are being sold by Gladiator Forensics were working properly or that there's no issues with those, there's no way to do that, is there?
Yeah, absolutely. You could go buy the sensors associated with reading the different cellular frequencies in the area, and you could do your own drive test.
Well, why don't you just get Gladiator Forensics to send us the tools and the program, and we could verify it that way? Wouldn't that be the simpler way to do it?
I don't work for the company, sir, so I don't.
I said objection argumentative.
Well, it came and went quickly. Mr. Pryor and Mr. Balance, please don't talk at the same time as each other.
Now, the most accurate location data would actually come from the device itself. Would that be fair?
Can you clarify what you mean?
If you were looking at location data for a device, the best way to determine the location data is to actually have the device itself, right?
I would say it could aid, but I wouldn't necessarily say it would be the best because it depends on the settings of the actual device.
Okay. Now, I want to go back to Exhibit 51, if we could. And Judge, if we could put that up there.
Yes, we'll ask the clerk to do that, please.
Now, with a pointer, you have some marks there, and it's showing a pond. Is that right?
It's showing
a irrigation pond.
Yes, sir. I believe that's what it was.
Okay, and do you have an idea approximately, since you've been out there, how much property we're talking about here?
So, if you are able to zoom out, it does have a scale on the bottom right, and that'll help.
And that I can't do.
Okay.
So in what I'm looking at on the map, there's a road that runs, I believe, north and south. Is that right?
Talking there. About this here, sir?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
And then initially you would put on the road running north and south, you'd put Alex Cox's car over at the top there somewhere. Is that right?
I believe that was associated with September the 9th.
Okay. And then down below, there's a road that runs east-west.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then a little ways from the intersection of the north, south, east, west, it looks like a long driveway. Could you touch on that for me?
So are you talking over here?
No, I'm talking a little further right there.
Yes, sir.
And that's a driveway that goes into the property, correct?
I believe so. Okay. It's been a while since I've been at the property.
Okay. And then can you point where the location of the fire pit is?
So I believe it was somewhere in this area here.
Okay. And there's some sort of a green tree or a tree that's throwing some shade down there next to something brown, right?
Are you talking about here?
Nope, to the right, right there.
Okay.
And that's a tree or some shade of some kind, correct?
It's something I can't remember from my time at the property.
Okay. All right, Judge, that's good for now. Now, I want to go back to, I believe it was slide 20.
Okay.
And Judge, if we could have slide 20 put up there.
All right, slide 20 of exhibit 156. We'll get the exhibit up. You can locate the slide.
So on this particular slide, I noticed that the blue box on the right-hand side says something does not include. Would you read that for me?
Sure. Does not include all activity between 12 a.m. and 5 o'clock a.m. Only locates with 100 meters or less margin of error are depicted.
Okay, so the way I'm reading this is that the purple box shows some various times at a location. Is that right?
Correct.
And do you know whose location that is in the purple box?
So that's associated with the Google location history for Alex Cox.
Okay. And where is the location specifically?
So the ones that I believe you're referring to here on the left side?
The purple ones, yeah.
So that's at 2:42 in the morning and 3:37 in the morning, just west of Lori Vallow's apartment.
So they're out, they're at or near Lori Vallow's apartment at those times, right?
The device is reporting just west of Lori Vallow's apartment at that
time. Okay. And again, the times are what?
At 2:42 in the morning and then 3:37 in the morning.
And the margin of error on that is what?
4 meters.
12 feet.
Approximately.
So close to or in close proximity of Lori Vallow's apartment at that time in the morning, correct?
Yes, sir.
Now, I guess I'm curious. I noticed that you put, and this is on September 9th, right?
Yes, sir. Correct.
I noticed that you put down a couple of phones with Chad Daybell, right?
Yes, sir.
You put down a phone with Alex Cox, right?
Yes, sir.
You put down a phone with Lori Vallow.
Yes, sir.
Well, why aren't you looking at Melanie Gibb and David Warwick?
Your Honor, objection misstates the evidence.
Overruled.
Why aren't you looking at phone records for David Warwick and Melanie Gibb.
So I was not asked to examine any records for those two.
Nobody asked you? No one provided that information to you?
I wasn't asked to examine records for those two.
Okay. Were you aware that at that time, at the location of Alex Cox's phone location, that in close proximity on that day, Melanie Gibb and David Warwick were also there? Were you
Objection aware? Misstates the evidence.
Sustained.
So who provided you this phone data?
I don't recall specifically. I know multiple data sets were sent on different occasions from the numerous members of the investigative team.
And who in the investigating team determines what phone records you look at?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. So then at some point we go to a big yellow circle. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And the phone location is showing in that big yellow circle, correct?
Correct.
And how long is that phone locator hitting in that big yellow circle?
I believe it was approximately an hour, but it's not showing on the screen, the bottom part of the page.
Okay. Now, what you didn't do, I noticed in your report that you also didn't mention before 12 a.m. on September 9th. Is that right?
Correct.
And are you aware that of the phone location prior to 12 o'clock on September 9th?
I could look at it, but I don't recall what that location was.
Now, you didn't have, I'm sorry, Judge, I bumped that and we can take that down. You didn't show Chad Daybell's location on September 23rd anywhere near those apartments. Is that correct?
I don't believe I did. I'd have to go back and look at the report to see. I think that was only on September the 9th.
And then in regards to the text messaging that you talked about, we don't know what the contents of that text message between all of these folks was discussing, correct?
We do not.
And you testified previously that it wasn't uncommon for Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell to frequently be communicating, correct?
That's correct.
In fact, on a daily basis, multiple communications in the morning, correct?
I remember seeing significant amount of communications between the two.
And significant amount of communications in the evenings as well, right?
I believe there was evening hours as well. I would just need to examine the records in total to give you like approximate time.
Okay. Are you aware that the two of those folks were having an affair?
Yeah, I was.
Okay. And you're aware as part of that affair that they'd be communicating. Wouldn't you expect them to be communicating quite regularly?
I would expect that to be the case. Yes, sir.
Okay. On those days that you talked about with Alex Cox being at the property on September 6th, September 25th, October 15th, did you happen to notice where Chad Daybell was on those days?
I don't recall looking at that information.
You didn't look into that, right?
I don't recall looking into that, no.
Okay. All right. Judge, I don't have anything else. Thank you.
All right. That concludes the cross-examination then. Mr. Wood, if you'd like to have redirect, you may.
Just briefly.
All right. All right. We'll have Exhibit 156 returned to the clerk, please. Thank you, Mr. Bailiff.
Thank you.
May I proceed, Your Honor?
You may.
Thank you. Agent, you were asked by defense counsel about your margin of error.
Yes, sir, I was.
And I think we kind of went over that a little bit earlier, but can you again describe for the jury why you used 100 meters margin of error?
Sure. So typically with Google locations, like I mentioned, you can see margin of error all the way from 3 meters all the way up to thousands of meters. And so if there's a specific date and time that I'm looking at, I find it to be much more precise to look at those 100 meters or less, because it gives me a good indicator of where that phone was at that particular time. Now, with that, it's reporting from a cell phone. So when you start getting into larger margin of error, I also have records associated with that phone that can aid in mapping where that phone was as well. So again, it's just a matter of being as precise as possible whenever I'm conducting analysis.
So if you increase that margin of error, is that literally increasing the geographical location?
Excuse me, what was that?
Objection, leading.
Sustained.
Okay. When you increase the margin of error, what does that do to your possible results?
So the yellow circles that you saw, basically any margin of error that you see, that circle is going to correspond with it. So the larger the margin of error, the more geographical area that locate is going to provide or show on the map.
Okay. And so could that potentially change results?
It would definitely change the results from the standpoint of whenever I'm looking at any time a Google location was in the vicinity of the Daybell property, because if you increased that margin of error, it would make circles that otherwise would not have shown being at that location.
You were asked about your drive test.
Yes, sir.
And about potential differences in the cell towers and cell sites between when you conducted your drive test in September of 2019.
Yes, sir.
Judge, and you, objection. I think there's a mischaracterization. I'm not sure, but I think he said drive test in September of 2019. Is that what Mr. Wood said?
There was a reference to September 2019 drive test.
Let me rephrase that.
Thank you, Mr. Wood.
So you did your drive test. When did you do your drive test?
That was in June of 2020.
And the events we're talking about took place when?
In September and October of 2019.
And was it your testimony that you did an analysis on any possible changes in those cell towers and cell sites between those two times?
Yeah, so I examined the records from the tower lists that are maintained by the provider for September of 2019 and June of 2020.
And was there anything in your analysis that led you to be less confident in the results of your drive test?
No.
You were asked about the Gladiator system or the GAR.
Yes, sir.
And your testimony was that the GAR is provided only to law enforcement.
So it's available for purchase by law enforcement.
Okay. But it's made up of components.
Yes, sir. Correct.
And those components are available to the civilian market.
Yes. The primary components that are taking the measurements are available to anyone to purchase.
And is the government the only entity that does drive testing?
No.
Okay. So do civilian companies do drive testing?
Yes.
All right. And you spoke about a raw data file that you produced.
Yes, sir.
So could a civilian take that and verify, or at least map out what you did and verify it against your results?
Yes. The data file itself would be require some knowledge of how the cellular networks work, but that raw data file contains all the same information as far as what the measurements were from specific locations.
So a civilian who knows what they're doing doesn't have to have the GAR.
Objection leading.
Sustain.
A civilian who has experience in drive testing, would they have to have the GAR to verify your results?
No, there's numerous products available that you could conduct the same type of test.
Okay. You were asked about the settings on a device, and I believe it was in relation to, isn't the best way to locate a device with the device itself?
I was asked that, yes, sir.
Let's talk about the settings on a device. Can you alter the geolocation settings on a device?
So on a device, there's multiple ways that location information could be stored. And as a user, you do have the ability to make changes as far as what is potentially stored on your device. But there's so many different types of cell phones that it's very dependent on what specifically phone we're speaking about.
But just to be clear, it is possible to opt out of certain geolocation services.
Yes, it is.
You testified earlier that you've been a part of multiple investigations.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
And are multiple of those investigations, do those include criminal activity?
They do.
Is it common for people involved in criminal activity to opt out?
Objection calls for speculation.
I think I've laid the proper foundation.
Well, I'll listen to the question. Mr. Wood, you can finish the question. I'll make a ruling.
Is it common for individuals engaged in criminal activity to opt out of geolocation services on their devices?
Objection.
The objection's overruled.
Yes, I've seen that in numerous cases.
Your Honor, I have no further questions today. I would note that we do intend to bring Agent Balance back.
Okay. Mr. Pryor, I'm not sure that we went outside the scope of your cross there on redirect. Is there anything else you
want? Opting out, Judge, and then I'm going to need to move for admission of 122 by stipulation of the parties, Judge.
I'm sorry. Going back to whether or not you intended to recross?
Be opting out, Judge.
Your Honor, that was directly in response to a question he asked about devices and settings on a device. I don't think I went outside of the ROS.
All right. I do agree with that. I don't think that's outside the scope. It'll also be something that you may be able to recross on or cross on and when the agent's recalled, which the state's indicated will be occurring. So we're going to not have recross today on the agent. That will then conclude the testimony of Agent Balance. The court's advised that you will be returning potentially for further testimony. Because of that, you're still subject to the exclusionary rule, meaning you're not allowed to view trial court testimony that's taking place. And I'll be asking you about that again before you take the stand. If you were to do that, you may be prohibited from further testimony or sanctioned by the court. So with that in mind, that will complete the testimony for today of this witness. You may go ahead and step down from the witness stand. Thank you.
And Your Honor, I previously mentioned Exhibit 122 that I failed to bring that up on my cross.
Is that an exhibit you wish to seek admission of?
It is, Judge, and it's by stipulation of the parties.
Okay. Well, we don't have the witness on the stand, but with this exhibit, does the state have any objection to us at this time admitting a defense Exhibit 122?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Defense has proffered Exhibit 122. The court will allow for its admission without objection from the state.
And Your Honor, may we have a brief sidebar?
Yes. All right. We took a sidebar there just to discuss calendaring with, or scheduling, I should say, with counsel. And there also may be a matter we need to take up outside the jury's presence. So what we're going to do is break a little early, well, early today for lunch. We're going to take the noon break at this time at 11:30, and we'll intend to come back on at 12:45 with additional testimony. So we'll take a slightly longer lunch as well, starting now. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, as I've told you repeatedly, but we'll keep trying to remind myself to tell you, please don't discuss the case or the evidence amongst yourselves or with anyone else while we're on break. We'll return back at 12:45 for additional testimony from a new witness from the state, and we'll be in recess till then.
All right, please.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.